standing here to humbly see. I assure you, and I mean it. Now who says I don't speak out as plain as day? And fellow Texans, I'm for progress and the flag. Long may it fly. I'm a poor boy, come to greatness. So it follows that I cannot tell a lie.
What the hell did he say?
Same as usual, not a damn thing.
Ooh, I love to dance a little sidestep. Now they see me, now they don't. I've come and gone and ooh, I love to sweep around a white step. Cut a little swath and leave the people alone.
Governor, do you plan to take action against the chicken ranch?
Now, my good friends, it behooves me to be solemn and declare I'm for goodness and for profit and for living clean and saying daily prayer. And now, my good friends, you can sleep nights. I'll continue to stand tall. Trust me, for I promise I shall keep a watchful eye upon y'all.
Stuff we've seen. There's a lot of stuff out there, and there's two cats we know that have seen them. Stuff we've seen. Hey, everyone. This is Jim.
You got to put that in GarageBand.
It is in GarageBand, technically. I'm editing that. Hey, welcome to Stuff We've Seen. This is Jim. And now, a man who spent his first 11 years living in a crawl space underneath the staircase until he was whisked away to a left-wing progressive wizarding finishing school in southern Vermont, Teal. Hello. How's it going, buddy?
It's going good. How you doing?
I'm here. Yeah,
that's something. That's something.
Yep.
So what's going on?
All right. Well, first, a little housekeeping from a couple episodes ago when we did E.T. and the Daughters films.
Yes.
There was a film that I mentioned, A Dick, and I said it was directed by Peyton Reed, I believe.
Yes.
It is not. It's directed by Andrew Fleming, the director of Heathers, right?
Yes. He didn't direct Heathers.
Then Andrew Fleming did something.
Didn't he do that?
Was it The Craft? No. Yes. Yes, he did The Craft.
Okay.
All right. So anyways.
I'm
going to do housekeeping on this housekeeping.
Your housekeeping made a bigger mess.
All right. Maybe we'll edit it out. If you don't hear this, then you'll know it just wasn't worth it. So, hey, guess what? It's around the corner, my friend.
What?
The Criterion Channel launch.
I am so excited about this.
I am too. It's funny, as it was on our second episode that I had to announce the terrible news
that Filmstruck.
Well, it was Criterion and Filmstruck, which I know people are like, well, what was the difference? And there was a slight difference, but Criterion has risen from the ashes and will be coming back on all of the various streaming outlets on April 8th.
Yes.
And if you get your subscription now, you can actually get a discount,
I think it's about 10% discount, maybe.
Yeah. And then it's sort of grandfathered in for, you know, the duration of your subscription.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so it's totally worth it.
I think you can get a year for $90.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I did it. So I already did it, you know, got myself all geared up.
Me too. And I'm excited to, on April 8th, download the Roku app.
Yeah. You know, I had it for about 5 months, and it, for a film lover like myself, it was invaluable because not only did it give me access to a whole bunch of movies that I love, and some of them I'd already owned on Criterion, but you know, you can't own them all.
Right.
And more importantly, it just gave me access to most of the library. They'd rotate it. I mean, you don't get every movie
right. And
that
I assume this new channel will be the same kind of thing. They'll have a certain number of films and they'll rotate them around.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like 100. I mean, they have a ton of movies available. Right. But it allowed me to kind of go down and say, hey, this film director or that film director, I really haven't seen either any or many of their films.
Right.
So let me start, getting my education. And so I'm excited to get back to some of the things that I was doing.
doing some director binges.
Yeah. Now, I don't know, out there who's familiar with Criterion as far as their website, but what they've always done, because prior to the streaming service, they were, they sold their videos on Blu-ray or DVD before that, and then even way, way back when, Laserdisc.
Yes, that was sort of the original Criterion, was the Laserdisc.
Yeah, and it was always, focused a little bit more on a collection of more artistic, mm-hmm. Artsy films, but that's not always the case. For some strange reason, they did allow What's-His-Face's film, Pearl Harbor.
Yes, Pearl Harbor is somehow, there's a Criterion collection, which I get a movie like RoboCop having a Criterion collection. But Pearl Harbor does not transcend anything.
No, it does not. And we're not going to talk about that because that's its own episode, my supreme hatred for that film and why.
But I think it's a really good film based on a comic book.
Yeah, Pearl Harbor, the comic.
Yeah, it was a comic book, right, first?
Maybe.
Because it certainly feels like it's based on a comic book.
It was
book.
Very cartoony and Disney-fied and a lot of other issues, but
no smoking. Put that aside. No smoking.
See, now we're going to get into that. That was a big thing. Look, I'm not a pro smoking, but I really hate it when you are looking at a historical depiction of something and you remove things like smoking. Well, these characters would have smoked, and that really distracted me. I hate distractions like that.
But that is really distracting.
It took me right out of the movie. And it, of course, it featured really, really hammy, bad performances. It was that movie was so. But I feel like if I'm going to talk about how much I hate that film, I'm going to have to watch. We're going to have to watch it again.
Yeah.
Just so that I can remember every juicy nugget of the hatred.
So there are a few, I don't know, films like that in the Criterion list that are not maybe
Criterion standards.
Right. Not maybe up to the classic standards. Yeah.
But a couple of things they do on the website is various filmmakers, film historians, or other pop culture figures, they will get them from time to time to do a top 10. And what these top 10s are kind of their own personal Criterion film recommendations.
Right.
And I love to look through them and just see what a particular filmmaker or artist chooses.
Do you have an example of somebody that you whose list you liked?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily someone who I like, but they've had people from Bill Hader, stopped in, Brie Larson from several years ago before
she fascinating.
Was doing any Marvel. See, that's another thing I learned. I did watch that, by the way.
Yeah, me too.
I was away last week with my two sons and we were close to an IMAX theater, so we said, well, let's go see it. And I got to confess something. I enjoyed myself at Captain Marvel, which I'm not a comic book reader, so I didn't know.
I didn't know either,
Now I will never call it Marvel. I'm always going to call it Marvel.
Marvel. The Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, and I really did enjoy it. However, a week later, I've almost forgotten the entire movie and what it was about.
Yeah, it's pretty forgettable. Her performance is pretty good. I thought she was a good hero and she was charming. And I think she brought a lot to the role that wasn't in the script.
A lot of energy. And of course, it's Brie Larson. She's a great actress.
Yeah.
And I don't have any issues. I really don't.
How did they make Sam Jackson look so young?
Well, it's CGI, and they did CGI on him, and then the guy who plays Coulson.
Yeah.
And that's the same technology they've been working on for The Irishman. the Martin Scorsese film. They shot The Irishman a couple of years ago.
Right.
But they had made the decision that all the actors were going to play younger versions of themselves instead of hiring younger actors.
Right.
And they thought, well, we can do it in CGI. But I think the reality was it just always, like even like 3 or 4 years ago.
It wasn't there.
But it's getting better and better. So what's happened, it slowed the movie down.
Okay.
Okay. So anyways.
Anyway.
They have, look, they have D.A. Pennebaker does a list.
Oh, cool.
Chris Hedges does a list.
Nice. I noticed they've got a couple of things in the Criterion.
Oh, they have. And I actually watched Daybreak Express.
Oh, yeah.
When I first, that was one of the first things I watched when I got the Criterion channel back in June of last year.
So they have short films, too.
They have short films. They have The Red Balloon.
Oh, yes. I love The Red Balloon.
But they have, like, brilliant copies. Like, they just look like they were freshly struck. And it's such a treat to watch some of these films in just the most gorgeous renditions. So anyways, what we thought would be fun in honor of Criterion coming back is, since I am not a noted celebrity, I don't get a chance to put up the top 10, and I want my due. And maybe Criterion, if you're out there, if you're looking for a couple of clowns to come up maybe with promote a show, I think you and I could be available. We'd gladly give up our show to do a Criterion show for a small fee. Very small.
Very small.
We work pretty cheap. And then I think what you were going to do, since maybe you weren't as much of a Criterion collector as myself.
Right.
You were going to maybe do a top 10 of films that you're really looking forward to.
Yeah. Watching. So what I did, I'll tell you how I came up with my list. I went through the entire Criterion catalog.
And that'll take you down a rabbit hole.
It was many rabbit holes. And
it probably got you very excited, too. You're like, what? This is one of them?
Yeah, one thing that's not on my list, but I'll mention right now that got me really excited is Zatoichi. There's about, yes, like 20 Zatoichi movies.
And they were on the Criterion channel the last time, so I'm anticipating they'll be back again.
And that, to me, just seemed like a really attractive binge.
Well, you'll certainly spend some time there, because I mean that's actually one of the things where, I thought I had plenty of time. I got the service, and I felt like it was going to be multi years, and I was excited that something like Zatoichi, I would be like, well, there's going to be like a time where I've watched pretty much everything else, and now I'm going to just do this. But I didn't have time to do that, so I have not seen the Zatoichi collection.
Yeah. So that caught my eye. So I went through the list and I wrote down basically everything that if I was given complete access to the Criterion catalog, these are the things I would watch first.
Well, that sounds very interesting, and I want to hear some of those right now.
Yeah. And I wouldn't watch all of them in the first week, but these are the ones.
No.
They're movies I've seen before that I may not have seen for a long time that I'm like excited about seeing again. So not necessarily a best of list at all.
Right.
Because how many times can I put Barry Lyndon on a list?
Well, we'll see. I don't have a problem with that.
You want me to throw out a title for you?
Sure.
Okay. Wages of Fear.
Oh, you know, it's funny. You and I saw that back in the New York City 12th Street days.
Yes. Yeah, great movie, a great thriller that was remade into that movie Sorcerer.
Yeah, but I would love to see, and again, I feel like this was something where Filmstruck was great, is as a counter-programming, and maybe Criterion will do this, they would offer up both, and they would do these double features. They did Friday night double features. You could watch them separately, but they decided to pair movies for you.
Okay.
And they would do that. They would put it Sorcerer
next to Wages of Fear. Yeah, I would totally watch both of them again. But yeah, that was a title that leapt out at me as something like, ooh, I'd be excited to watch that like next week.
Yeah, well, you're doing exactly what I did in June. Like when I got finally my hands on it, I suddenly put in their queue all of these films that either A, I can't wait to watch again, or B, I've always wanted to see this.
Yeah. Yeah, and some films, you know, there were a lot of films on this list where I've seen them maybe a dozen times. And I'm excited that they're available, and they would probably go on a top 10 list, but I'm not that excited to watch them next week.
Right. Okay, so Wages of Fear is one. Give me another.
Unbearable Lightness of Being.
I would like to rewatch that, actually. Now you're giving me recommendations for when it comes back that I want to watch.
Yeah, I've only seen it. Maybe I saw it twice, but...
I haven't seen it in years.
I haven't seen it in years and years and years, and I just remember it being pretty powerful. Amazing cinematography, I remember.
Yes, nominated for an Oscar.
And I like Philip Kaufman generally.
I like Kaufman as well, and it's kind of, I feel, well, it's sad he's still alive, but, you know, I feel like there's more movies that I wished he had made.
Yes, yeah. It was too long between movies for him, I think. And then he just did some terrible movies.
Rising Sun.
I was, yep, Rising Sun. Yep.
Yep. Kohai. I did that actually for Bill from Queens because he always likes to remind me of that terrible movie.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Okay, give me another.
Sisters.
When there was only about a month left of Criterion, I watched Sisters for the first time.
Oh.
Oh, man, that is awesome, awesome stuff.
Isn't it?
Yep, Brian De Palma, one of his early films.
Yes, with some amazing split screen.
Yeah, sort of his first foray into Alfred Hitchcock homage.
Yes, exactly. He went full Hitchcock on this movie.
Well, he did, but at that time, he was kind of doing his own thing, but with a Hitchcock kind of flair.
Yeah.
He got very much into the copying of Hitchcock as the films progressed. But
right, that's true. Dressed to Kill is much more...
Yeah. Sisters is a really interesting film.
It's a really interesting film. It's, yeah, somehow it just got under my skin years ago when I saw it. And when I saw it in Criterion, I thought, I want to see that again. Been such a long time.
Probably watched it just around the time that Margot Kidder died.
Okay. Yeah, it's Margot Kidder and Jennifer Salt.
Yeah. So I maybe have wanted to watch one of her early performances because we also watched around the same time Black Christmas.
Okay. Okay.
Which is this weird Canadian horror film, and Margot Kidder plays a college co-ed in it.
Okay. So, yeah, you were on a Margot Kidder kick.
Yes. There's not that many movies to grab to watch. But, so Sisters, I'm loving that. I already saw that once. I don't need it. But I will go back to watch The Unbearable Lightness of Being, I think, when Criterion comes back.
Yeah. Both of those I'm looking forward to seeing.
So do we want to continue on your list or do we want to jump? I don't know.
I'll give you one or two more and then we'll jump over to your list.
Okay. Yeah, because we'll do half and then half. That sounds good.
Black Narcissus.
That almost made my top 10 list.
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw that?
Let's see. It was sometime in the late 90s. And
you know what? You have not seen it. And I'll tell you why. Because the print that you're going to see on Criterion is going to blow you away.
Well, last time I saw it in the theater.
Yeah, but you know what?
But it was not restored. It was not the greatest print. But yeah, the last time I saw it was in the theater and I loved it.
So that's one here's an area where digital, you know, I always have the mixed bag on digital, but digital restorations and being able to get the color registration from strip Technicolor back.
And the color in Black Narcissus is, in a way, what the movie's all about. The color is just astounding in that movie.
Well, that's, of course, it's Powell and Pressburger, the Archers, and their brilliant cinematographer, Jack Cardiff.
Yes.
And it's in England, they used Technicolor in a much different way than America.
Oh, interesting.
And part of the reason is because the inventor of Technicolor, his wife was a consultant for Technicolor use on American Hollywood film productions. And she had tremendous say in how the look of the colors and costumes must be for a Technicolor film. She, like, if you were to use Technicolor, you had to have her as the consultant. And so films had a very certain look, where in England, they didn't have her, and they chose a whole different path.
This is a fascinating story. Wow.
Well, you're into my wheelhouse of very Technicolor, and you jump, and I don't say jump, but, like, I'm kind of glad I didn't put Black Narcissus on my list. We're going to talk about the Archers in a second.
Oh, okay.
But their use of color and their cinematographer, Jack Cardiff.
Yes.
It's just, if you haven't seen this Black Narcissus, you just sit back and you're going to watch something that you're like, whoa.
Yeah, this is a film that people who see it for the first time, I've seen it with people who watched it for the first time, and they're just completely blown away by it.
Well, first of all, you know, it's set up in the Himalayas.
Yeah.
And you may or may not know, It has this weird dreamy look. It is filmed entirely on a soundstage.
Yes.
And they created these clouds and everything. And you honestly, like when you know that, you look and go, okay, I guess it was set on a soundstage, but you feel like you're up in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
And that it's such an amazing feat that they did with no special effects to be able to use back then.
Yeah. Did they use any like rear projection or anything?
No, they created all these backgrounds and they came up with these ways to create clouds and stuff. It's amazing.
Okay, that's incredible. Yeah, incredible film. Definitely check it out if you have the opportunity.
I know in a few weeks we're going to be talking about it again because you're going to see that print. I own it on Blu-ray from Criterion.
Okay.
And it's going to knock your socks off.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, so now you've got four in. You got one more.
I'll do one more. Let's do Sullivan's Travels.
I haven't seen that since film school.
Neither have I. And I remember really liking it. I thought it was funny and more than funny, smart.
Yeah, it's not really, believe it or not, it's not really a comedy. It's kind of sad.
It's kind of sad. It's a tragic comedy in a way. I mean, it has funny parts, but it's kind of sad. And it's about a filmmaker who wants to get in touch with the people. And so he goes out on this road trip. He feels like he's too isolated in his Hollywood cocoon. So he goes out to try to connect with the real people for his next film. And it is, it's sad at times. It's funny at times. Yeah, it's been a long time since I saw it. And when I saw it on the list, I thought, you know, I do kind of want to see that movie again.
Yeah, I mean, it's got one of the biggest roles for Veronica Lake.
Yes. I think Preston Sturges is a great director, but if I had to make like a top five for him, Sullivan's Travels would be in it.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was a movie that I was introduced to in film school and we're going back 30 years. I think in 30 years later, there's just more people don't know about the film.
I think that's true. Yeah. And I want to watch it again. And it's a movie I would recommend to people.
All right. So now we're going to go into my top 10, which is weird. These top 10 lists, it's really not like the top 10 best films of all time that I think. And they're not even my like top 10 favorite criterion. I kind of, you know, to pick 10 is really tricky.
Right.
There's so many that I could have included, but I kind of wanted to create some diversity in the options.
Oh, and I felt. Yeah, like so you want a comedy and a horror film and...
Or
different genres is what I'm saying, yeah.
Some different genres or kind of like a medley if you haven't seen these films.
Right.
Each one of them is going to give you something and it really kind of demonstrates the sort of full breadth of what Criterion provides.
Okay. Oh, this sounds like a great list. Yeah, so it's not really a top 10.
Maybe. Exactly. I mean, again,
It's maybe your top 10 recommendations for somebody who's just getting the Criterion Channel.
Yeah. And I will say that the majority of these I do own personally on Criterion Blu-ray. Not all of them, but if I don't own them, I wished I owned them. So anyways, they're not particular order, so I'm just going to...
Yeah, mine are in no particular order either. Yeah.
Well, we just mentioned them. With Black Narcissus, there's one that blew me away even more, was The Red Shoes.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And
so here's the thing. It was a movie I resisted most of my life.
Yeah.
I thought I was like, I don't want to see this ballet movie. And it looks boring. And I may have caught a few clips over the years and just nothing did it for me, except that I was kind of interested that it was in that early Technicolor.
Right.
Then about 10 years or so ago, I caught it from the beginning on Turner Classic Movies. And I thought this movie was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I thought that the print that they had looked pretty good. The biggest issue was early Technicolor was not on one strip of film. It was on three right. different strips of film that were that they were sensitive to the various light colors, so that when
exactly.
you combined
so
them,
one strip for each color, and
over time, the problem is that the prints, they, it's very hard to get the color alignment just right. so because of the three strips. So you might see some little haloing effects on the prints. You just sort of right. like the color just looks slightly out of register.
Yeah.
And again, this print on Turner Classic Movies looked pretty good, but it didn't, it just didn't look as scrumptious as I was hoping. So then Criterion released a brand new restored version, like, and I'm talking, you know, digitally
fixed
colors, sort of Martin Scorsese was involved in the restoration with his editor, Thelma Schumacher, who was married to Michael Paul.
That's right. Yes.
And so she helped supervise.
Okay.
And I just said, you know what? I'm going to bet on this one. I'm going to get this and it's going to, I bet it'll look good. I was not prepared. This was single-handedly the most stunning transfer of a movie I've ever seen.
Wow.
I felt like it was 1948 and I was seeing a premiere of a, of the movie with the very first time this, you know, dye transfer print was run through a projector. When you, you got to see this, and I'm sure that the version that they have on Criterion, when it comes out on April 8th, you could see this and it will look the same.
Well,
it's fantastic.
It won't look quite as good as the Blu-ray.
No, but I mean, I have to say that, you know, if you have a good high def TV, it's going to look pretty good.
Yeah, I'm just saying that streaming has a lower bit rate than a Blu-ray. So
yeah, I always like the Blu-ray, and you know, I have a few 4Ks, but Criterion's not in the 4K high def business, so we probably will not see them producing those anytime soon.
Yeah, so I also haven't seen Red Shoes since around the same time I saw Black Narcissus, which was at a Powell and Pressburger festival.
Well, it's a perfect double bill.
It's a perfect double bill, yeah. They have another movie that I saw at that festival that I really like. I haven't
Peeping Tom?
I like that. This is called The Small Back Room.
I don't know that one.
It's really hard to find.
Hmm.
And, yeah, really interesting little movie.
So, anyways, the Archers is what they called themselves. They were kind of like the Spike Lee joint of their day. And I basically, at the beginning of these movies, you see an arrow go right through a bullseye, and it says the Archers. And when I see that, I'm saying that's a sign of quality. Okay, so that's one film that I would recommend, especially if people haven't seen it ever. That's a great venue for seeing it. Second, and again, we're talking about the best looking films and the best way that they could be presented, and that's what Criterion's all about.
Yes.
Would be Terrence Malick's Days of Heaven.
Of course, yes. Would be really high up on my list, except I watch it about once a year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm kind of, this is why, like I said, my top 10 is more for
people
out there that haven't seen
this
film.
That's what I'm saying, is that this film must be seen. I recommend this movie to people all the time. It's one of the greatest color films of all time. I love the storytelling in the movie too, which I think doesn't get quite enough credit because it's so beautiful and so cinematic.
It's lyrical.
It's very lyrical, but the story is told in these really subtle ways without a lot of dialogue, and it's a story that's told visually.
And it also has one of the greatest narrations ever with the voiceover from the actress Linda Mann.
So yes. Incredible voiceover and an incredible, this, I don't want to ruin it, but a really incredible ending, I think.
Yes. Well, I see this is another program to talk about Days of Heaven, but
I could spend a whole episode on Days of Heaven.
But I have to put it on. I just watched it again for the first time, you know, a few months ago. I've watched this movie, I don't know, a good 15 or so times. You just keep coming back to it and, you know, watching a master at work. On the same note, when I think of the two greatest looking films of all time and really about natural light, Days of Heaven is one and the other, and only because it's the best print I've ever seen of the film, Criterion released it about I don't know, 2 years ago, is mm-hmm. Barry Lyndon.
Oh, yes. And like I said, how many times can I put Barry Lyndon on a list? I mean, I've seen this, I've seen Barry Lyndon so many times. And every single time is an absolute pleasure.
Like, if I have to own, I own it on Criterion. If I'm going to own, these are the movies that I want to make sure I own.
Yeah.
And then this one is a kind of a classic as far as Criterion goes, because a lot of times it's about the extras mm-hmm. that they include.
Right.
And this was famous because it included like this great documentary about the troubled making of this movie and the troubled exhibition of the film. And it also includes the notorious like studio cut of this movie, as well as the director's original vision is Brazil.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's got to be amazing with the extras.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the nice thing about Criterion Channel is quite often when you click on the movie, there's also extras
right.
and you can go to the extras too. And they even sometimes have commentaries that you can click an audio option. So
I've never seen the studio cut of the Love Conquers All cut of Brazil. Have you watched it?
I will not watch it from beginning to end. However, I learned about this not through what I read, but one time I was watching TV and Brazil was on. It was only a few years after it was on. It was like, you know, one of the, it had been sold to, you know, whatever the right. syndicated shows were. And I'm watching this film and then it's like, suddenly the whole ending is different. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And then, of course, you know, reading about the history of Brazil and how, it, you know, we were lucky that we got to see the movie at all. It's a great story and there's a great documentary. And, of course, the print is great. So that's just a great one to own.
Yeah.
And then to kind of finish the first half of my list would be Dazed and Confused.
Oh, interesting pick. You know, I like that film, but I've only seen it maybe twice, and it's been a long time. That would be a good one on my list for something I want to see again. Yeah, you're an early adopter on that movie.
I'm an early adopter because I saw it in the theater, and, you know, people don't know the history. They might think, oh, well, Dazed and Confused, that's a big hit, but it was not.
It was not a big hit at all, no.
It was hardly released. I just wanted to see it, and I saw it opening weekend. And my friend and I, we loved it, thought it was hilarious. And, you know, I like those kind of coming age told in a day type stories,
right.
like American Graffiti. But what I love about this film and what is one of the things that I like about Richard Linklater is he sort of subscribes to that same philosophy I have. It doesn't matter what your budget is if you're going to make a film about a particular period,
right?
You need to make it as authentic as you can.
Yeah.
And when you watch it, this is what was so great. And if you've read about it, you'll understand is that it wasn't enough that it was going to be set in 1976. One of the things that I hate when I watch a period movie is there's like a soundtrack of like all of these hits from, say, the 80s or 70s.
Are you talking about Captain Marvel? Because I thought the 90s soundtrack was kind of awesome.
Well, you know, I wasn't bringing that up, but yeah, I mean, they threw it in. I don't know, even know if they had all the years right, but I will tell you this. In my brain, if I was to make a period movie, I would look at very specifically the date that this movie is supposed to be set on.
Right.
And I would make sure that the music was something that would really be there. And Richard Linklater made absolutely sure that every song that was played was something that was either in the just a few years leading up to the film
right.
or would have been on the radio at the exact time. So you hear a lot of these songs in that film, they were actually what would have been in the top 40 at the
right.
date that the movie takes place in 1976. And that's the kind of level of detail that adds an authenticity to the movie that is why you like it. See, those are the little things that people might not notice at first, but it adds to something that you believe you're watching a film that was like would have come out in 1976.
Right. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
And the fact that it was so low budget is even better because it has a look to it.
Yeah.
That is more like a film that would have been like this, like, you know, movie made for drive-ins or something.
Yeah, it does feel like that.
And then, of course, if you watch the movie, it's like a whole host of people who did go on to greater and better things.
It is kind of amazing, isn't it? Yeah. There are movies like that. Another one I would think of would be Taps.
Oh, you mean the one with Tom Cruise?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Tom Tom Cruise, right? He was a bit player in that.
He was a bit player, yeah.
Key role at the end, but Timothy Hutton was the main star.
Yeah.
George C. Scott. And I wonder who else was in that. Put me on the spot. I don't remember. But if we went through the IMDb credits,
I'm sure we would find that there's,
Well, that is fun when you go back to some of these movies and you suddenly see an actor pop up who's like really popular now and you had no idea they were in that film.
Sean Penn was in it.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's like my five, I think.
Okay.
For the first half. So now we're back to you.
Oh, we're back to me for my next five?
Yeah.
Okay. Through a Glass Darkly.
Funny you mentioned that. That was one of the films that I was watching when Criterion was down. I couldn't get back to finishing it.
Oh, man.
It's so amazing looking.
It's short, too. I think it's only about 90 minutes.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just, you know, I was on a big Ingmar Bergman kick.
Okay.
And I had like three or four different ones I was watching. And then, you know, you had to pick and choose. I had only a month
right,
left
yes.
with a notice. And there were some things I really wanted to watch more. And I just didn't get back to that film. So, yeah, I'm going to get back to it once it's up next.
And I don't know what, I mean, I guess I could go into why, but it is my favorite Bergman film.
Now, that is interesting.
It's a lesser-known one. It's not as popular as, say, Cries and
It's pretty well-known, though.
It's pretty well-known, but something about this movie, I think how small it is, it almost takes place entirely in a house, and it's really psychological in a Freudian way, and just a really intense, and a part of it is the length. Because it's so short, it's just a really intense, tight little movie. The next one on my list is Night of the Hunter.
Well, well, well. It's another one that I watch while Criterion Filmstruck was on. Because it's just, I mean, again, you watch great print and it's so weird and creepy.
Yeah, yeah. Charles Laughton directed it, I believe.
Yep.
Definitely worth checking out. Did you like it?
Oh, it wasn't the first time I watched it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's a classic. Okay.
For some reason, I thought it was the first time you watched it. Yeah.
No. Okay. No. I mean, I haven't seen it a ton of times, but it's one of those, again, a great movie. Sometimes you need to revisit.
Yes. And that's a movie that I want to revisit. I haven't seen it in a really long time. I think the last time I saw it, I saw it in the theater because it was restored at some point in the early 90s. And went around on a little, you know, college circuit, I think is where I saw it.
You and those colleges, right? Seen some films on the college circuit.
The college circuit can be pretty good. Yeah. Okay, here's another one. And this I have not seen, again, not seen in a really long time. I'm not sure if it will hold up, but I really am curious to see it again. Rumblefish.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking 30 years since I saw that.
Yeah.
I actually may have saw it. We rented it, I think.
I think we watched it together at one point, yeah.
Yeah,
and
so I'd check that out again.
Yeah, it has really unique cinematography. They used arc lights. It has some really interesting kind of forced perspective tricks. Some typical sort of Coppola playing with the medium in interesting ways. Nicolas Cage is in it, one of his early roles. But that's something I want to check out again, Rumblefish. Let's see, what else do I have here? Shoot the Piano Player.
François Truffaut.
Yes, Truffaut's Shoot the Piano Player, which is based on a David Goodis novel. So it's an American noir novel that Truffaut turned into, I guess it's a noir film, but it's a Truffaut noir film.
It was another one that I had started and couldn't get through because there just wasn't enough time.
Right, right.
Criterion.
So, okay, so these are things that you can finish up when... Yeah. Okay, and then the last film on my list is Canal.
Canal.
Canal by Andrzej Wajda.
I don't know this one.
It's part of the Warsaw Trilogy. I was going to say trilogy. Andrzej Wajda's Warsaw Trilogy it's Canal, Ashes and Diamonds, and A Generation.
I've only seen Ashes and Diamonds.
Okay. All three are great. For some reason, Canal, if I had to pick one, Canal is the one I would want to watch first. It's about the Warsaw Ghetto and people escaping through the sewers.
Well, that does sound interesting.
And it's really interesting. I mean, all three of these films, I think, should be watched kind of together. They're not really a trilogy in the sense that the story is connected or that the characters carry between them. They're a thematic trilogy about Warsaw in this sort of post-war period. A Generation is interesting. There's a guy in it who's sort of like the Polish James Dean.
It's funny is that, you know, again, we're talking about Polish films. That film Cold War, I feel like that's your classic Criterion movie. Like, it needs to be part of Criterion.
Absolutely, yes. That will be a Criterion movie, I think, yeah.
When they can kind of wrestle it away from Amazon.
Yeah, so that's my list of 10. And, of course, it was really hard to get it down to 10 because there are so many others that I kind of want to watch.
Well, you know what it is? You don't want to... You're putting it down and you feel like, but there's all these other movies. I don't want to, it doesn't mean I don't want to watch you guys. I do want to watch you guys.
I don't know why.
I don't know why I picked you other ones first. I know. Well, that's why I'm like the same. I was like, these are just sort of, there's so many of these Criterion movies that I love.
Yeah.
These are kind of the 10 that popped into my head first. So I felt like must be strong enough that I got to make sure I put them down on a list to talk about them.
Right.
Getting back to my list of recommendations, the ones that, you know, I think people would even not just watch on Criterion Channel, but right. own, would be another Bergman movie. You mentioned Through Glass Darkly. I am mentioning Persona.
Oh, yeah. Oh, game changer.
Well, this was the discovery of watching it on Criterion all these years, never seeing Persona. I wanted to get into Bergman and refresh my, you know, kind of memory of the movies I had seen of his, as well as add some new things.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was just blown. I mean, I literally was blown away.
Yeah.
And the print looks so great that while I don't own this on Blu-ray, it's certainly one that I would consider owning in a heartbeat.
Yeah. And it's not the kind of movie that I want to rewatch a lot.
Not a lot, but
I mean, I definitely, you know, yeah, it's not like something that I really want to watch over and over again, but I love the movie.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think any of these movies are ones we want to watch over and again, you know, it's.
Well, Barry Lyndon, I watch over and again.
Well, you know, there's some exceptions.
There are. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you wouldn't watch it every week or something. I mean, I don't do it. You know, there's these people out there that they just will watch a movie over and over and over and over and over again. I think they're problematic people, but.
I've done that. You know, that was definitely in the 80s. If you'd have a videotape and you'd wear it out.
Well, yeah, that was the time when we would probably be considered the early VHS people.
Yeah.
And you go to that store and they only have like 30 copies.
Exactly.
And you get it for a holiday weekend, which means they were going to be closed and you could keep it.
Yes.
And I do recall several times with my family, we would watch this movie. As soon as it was over, we hit the rewind button.
Yep.
And we would just hit it play.
Exactly.
And I do recall this one Christmas holiday renting Animal House.
Uh-huh.
And we literally watched it 11 times that weekend.
Yeah, we did that with...
World According to Garp. Sorry, World According to Garp.
We did this with Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back.
Those came out pretty late on video, though.
We had VHS pirate copies.
Oh, those must have looked splendid.
Oh, they were disaster.
Is this the kind you picked up at a comic book convention?
Somehow, somebody my parents worked with had them and made copies for us. They were not good copies, but we watched them over and over and over and over again. So what else you got?
Okay, I got, again, some of these, you know, they're just the classics, but if I was going to have something in my library, which I do, is Fellini's 8.5.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
But it's because, again, Criterion, the extras they give you and the print itself are so great.
Yeah, that, and it is, it's a classic.
And it's not a movie I would say it's for everybody. It's just when you watch it and then you understand how influential it's been.
Yes, it's been. And I've shown it to people, younger people, millennials even, who it's really clicked with them.
Now, do you show it with all that jazz?
I have, yes.
And do you show it? See, this would be the perfect trilogy, is 8.5, all that jazz, which is also on Criterion, and I would have put that in my list, but I chose 8.5.
I left it off my list because I have seen it too many times.
I own all that jazz on Criterion as well.
Yeah.
And then Stardust Memories.
Oh, that's interesting. That hadn't occurred to me.
Yeah. Well, it was definitely influenced by 8.5. So.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It was. Yeah. Even the cinematography.
Yes. Okay. So there's 8.5. We don't have to really, there's not much you can say there. It's a classic.
Watch it if you haven't seen it.
Here's one where I love, I don't own it on Criterion. I have like a DVD copy of it from before it went on to Criterion. And I'd like to get the Criterion version or at least watch it again when it comes on. Hopefully it'll be on the channel. It wasn't on the channel the last time, but I just felt it was a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
Is Monty Hellman's Two Lane Blacktop.
Yeah, I saw that in the catalog and I almost put it on my list.
Well, have you seen it?
Yes.
Oh, you have? See, I wasn't sure if you ever even got to see it. And that's like, to me, it's just a movie that you would love.
Yeah.
We love road movies and it's a great one.
Yeah, it's an absolute classic road movie.
However, I will warn people, I call it, it's a paint drying movie where...
Yes, it is.
And I know this is strange to say, like, it's a film that when you watch it, it feels like you're watching paint drying. But I happen to love paint drying movies.
Yeah, if you have
the
to...
The right type.
You have to accept the pace and submit to it and let it... If you're impatient with it, if you want story to be happening at a regular clip, it's not going to satisfy that.
Yeah, or heavy. There's no heavy plot.
No, there's not
a lot of dialogue.
Yeah, no, it's a mood piece, really.
Yep, you know that I don't know why I've wanted to own it, but I think when you own something like on DVD already, you feel guilty buying another copy. But
right.
I've done that before. Barry Lyndon, I have several versions.
Yes, I in fact still have my two VHS, two cassette copy of Barry Lyndon. I've been buying Barry Lyndon since it was in VHS.
Okay, so a couple more movies.
Yeah,
and these aren't like shocking revelations or anything, but one would be David Lynch's Mulholland Drive.
Yes. I
own the copy.
I don't know. I don't want to get into comparing Lynch films, but that's one of my favorites.
It's one of my favorites as well. And it's just, again, I'm trying to go for films that make you think differently.
Yes. And
about the medium.
About the medium and maybe about the world. I had this experience when I saw Mulholland Drive. I saw it like opening week. In the theater, and I walked out of the theater and everything in the world seemed slightly ominous.
That's exactly how I felt. I felt like you just described. I also, it was still trying to kind of piece together what I saw and talk about it and make sense of it. It was more like, wait a second. Film doesn't have to be linear. Film
right.
doesn't have to be about what we think a movie should be. David Lynch is rewriting the rule book or making
yes.
his own rules. And that was exciting that film could be something different. It made me think about films differently.
Yeah. And he's trying to access emotion and audience reaction, but through different ways than are usually done. And so it does really get to you. In a visceral way, but not in the way that like a Hollywood movie pushes buttons to manipulate you emotionally. It's accessing your emotions in a way that they haven't been accessed before. And that feels so incredibly fresh and new when you're watching it.
Well, what was exciting is that, you know, it was originally a television pilot and it wasn't picked up. And
right.
I was horrified that it didn't get picked up because not only did I want to watch a new series from David Lynch, it meant that he had created something that I am not going to get to ever see.
Right.
And so that really bothered me. And then when I heard that he found a way to turn it into a movie, I was excited. And then it won Best Director at the Cannes Film Festival.
Yes.
And then when it was getting ready to be released, I was very, very excited about it. But then something happened. And what happened was 9/11.
Yes.
And that basically consumed everything, all the thoughts the world's attention, and nothing really ever felt normal. And it took several weeks before people really kind of wanted to go back to the movies again. And it was not the very first movie I saw after 9/11, but it was one of the first. And, you know, watching it and seeing how he took what was going to be a very interesting TV series to begin with.
Right.
And then he found this new way to tell a story that, on the one hand, it kind of makes no sense compared to what he was going to try to do with the TV series.
He reinvents it. He found a way to make intuitive sense out of sort of turning the TV pilot inside out on itself.
Well, and he turned it into almost something better.
Oh, much better. Yeah.
And so that's why that film still remains for me the best movie that I've seen in the entire 2000s.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. That's definitely my number one of that decade. And it's probably the number one film that I've seen in the last 20 years.
Wow. Okay.
And then
it's up there for me. I don't know if I'd put it that high, but it's,
well, that's you. What do you got?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to have to make a list now of the 2000s.
This is hard. You know what? It's funny when it was 70s, 80s, 90s, I had a lot easier time grappling with lists. But now that I feel like everything from 2000 up to now is all kind of one big period. So I have a hard time separating the decades.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's just a product of getting older.
Well, how about this, right? I actually put this up on our Instagram. That's right, we have an Instagram account, people.
Yes.
But I thought about this the other day. I'm always making these age comparisons.
Right.
And so if you graduated from college in the year 2003, right now you'd be ready for your own big chill. And that just seems mind-boggling to me, because when The Big Chill came out in 1983 and these people were reminiscing about, you know, what's happened in their lives since their college years, that felt to me like it was years ago.
And these were ancient people looking back on their youth.
And it was only 16 years.
Yes.
And now, so basically we could have a big chill with people from 2003.
Yeah, this is a whole nother conversation we can have at some point, but generation-defining movies are pretty interesting.
But we've totally digressed, but The Big Chill is also on Criterion, people.
Yes, yes, it is. Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that I really kind of wish that Lawrence Kasdan, while the cast is still alive and he's still alive, I'd love to see a sequel.
Oh.
Like a sequel of right now.
Yeah.
And maybe one of the characters has to die so we don't get them, and that's why they're back. But I would love to know, well, what happened? Here were these people, and it was the beginning of the 80s, but then what did they become?
That would be great to see. Have you seen it recently? I haven't seen it in a really – I don't know if it holds up.
You know what? Some of it's dated, but it holds up. My wife and I both like it because that soundtrack – her family
used to play it over
and over again.
We had the tape of the soundtrack in our car, and it just...
We had the tape as well. You know? And, of course, there was like, right, that's that decade-defining music that was so important to them. And that, I mean, it's definitely dated, but it's dated in an interesting way.
Okay, so it still holds... Yeah, I just haven't seen it. I think I haven't seen it since the 80s.
By the way, that was not on my list, but it is another movie that I would recommend people checking out. And again, I wish somebody out there hear this and get to the Lawrence Kasdan and get him to consider, and then just studios pony up the cash, because I'd love to see, I mean, think about it, Glenn Close, Meg Tilly, Jeff Goldblum, Tom Berenger, William Hurt, what's his face? Kevin Kline, all of them, and Joe Beth Williams, all of them back, except one has to die. So who would it be? We don't know.
Probably William Hurt.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe somebody had a grandkid, like something has to bring them back together.
Right.
But I think that we could have a really interesting exploration of what went right and wrong for them.
Okay. Over the years. You hear this, Kasdan? Put down the Star Wars pen.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. But first of all, like, did Mary Beth Hurt, did she end up having Kevin Kline's child?
Right.
You know, and did that, and how, what kind of dynamics did that have? These are things I want to know about. Okay. So my last film is Rushmore.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Great.
And the reason I include that is
I actually own the Criterion DVD of Rushmore.
I do too.
Yeah.
It was one of my first Criterion purchases.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, Rushmore, what can you say about it? I mean, again, is it my favorite movie? No. Is it my favorite of his movies? No. But it's just, it's the classic.
It is a classic. Yeah. It has become, it has become a classic.
Yeah. And I know it's funny. When it first came out, I was very excited to see it because I'd read some things about it and heard that Bill Murray was just outstanding in it. And I went to see it with some friends and my ex-girlfriend, like opening night, I think. And I remember being a little underwhelmed.
Oh, interesting.
I thought it started out great, but it wasn't what I had an expectation in my brain, what it was going to be about. And it was so different that I left kind of going, huh, I respect it. It's different.
But it didn't quite click for you.
It didn't click for me, but what did it do? It stayed with me.
Yeah.
And it stayed and stayed and stayed. And eventually the movie was kind of enough of a little hit that it came to my local theater. And I said, I need to go see this again. And it was the second time I watched it that I said, this is a movie.
Yeah.
This is great. And I've seen it now. It's a movie where if it shows up on TV, I'm sucked in and I watch it.
It's interesting you say about how it stayed with you and going through the Criterion list. A lot of the movies on there are movies that have stayed with me. And I think that's something about how they choose movies, right? With the exception of Pearl Harbor. Well, Pearl Harbor stayed with me, you know, in the wrong way.
Yes. Let's not end on that note.
No.
Believe it or not, we had a whole nother topic, by the way, people, that we were going to talk about. But we're not going to talk about it now because we're running low on time.
Okay. I'm throwing out one final recommendation.
Sure.
A Matter of Life and Death by...
Oh, that's another Pressburger movie,
right? Yes, and we were talking about...
Is that Colonel Blimp or...
No, it's actually... The American title is Stairway to Heaven.
Right. That's right. I always get that confused, yes.
And it was remade, of course, with Warren Beatty and again with Chris Rock. But the original with David Niven and Powell and Pressburger directed it. It's just a great romance movie.
Actually, I want to just stop you. I think you're incorrect.
What?
You're confusing it with Here Comes Mr. Jordan, which is what the Warren Beatty film was based on.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
Yeah. It's very confusing because of the titles, but it's still, it's a really cool movie.
Yeah.
The one you're talking about.
Matter of Life and Death, yeah.
I also, there's a film that I was waiting for it to get to the Criterion Channel. It didn't. And I'm hoping that this time around it will, is The Friends of Eddie Coyle. Yeah, it's one of my favorite Robert Mitchum roles.
I've never seen it.
Here, kids, there's going to be an episode where once the channel has launched, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the movies that we want to watch that we've never seen. So that we can recommend to each other, oh, you haven't seen that movie? You loser. You got to see that movie. What are you doing? Okay, so I think we should probably wrap up.
Yeah.
But this has been fun because now I'm jazzed, of course.
I am so excited about the Criterion Channel. I'm going to be hooked on it.
Yeah, I know. You got to find out some time, right?
Yes.
You can put into watching these films. Before we go, I have a question. Have you seen anything else since we last spoke? Anything?
Not other than Captain Marvel.
That was it. And that was all I've seen. I mean, I saw... Well, a couple of movies. I watched Sicario 2, Day of the Soldado.
Yes.
Wow, that was a bad movie, man.
I avoided that because it just did not look good.
I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of the first Sicario, except for the Roger Deakins cinematography.
Yes, great cinematography. I liked the first one, but I didn't love it.
I didn't think it needed a sequel. But
think anybody besides Benicio del Toro thought it needed a sequel.
You know, though, he's good in it. Like I did like his character. Yeah, but I mean, not a good movie. And then it was sort of a curiosity. I had never seen it. It showed up on some channel and I taped it because I was watching it late night and I had to finish it. And it is just as bad as I'd heard. Is the 1981 movie, John Huston directed it, Victory.
Oh, I have never seen that. Yeah. Now, is it Michael Caine?
Michael Caine, a very miscast Sylvester Stallone.
That's right.
Pele, isn't it?
That's right.
I don't know how he got there into the in the World War II prison camp, but you know, they needed somebody that could do the cool soccer moves. It's just, it starts off, actually kind of was like, got into it. It's that whole, you know, World War II prisoner right. war camp, and you know, there's going to be escapes, and they have like the escape committee and all that stuff, and I'm like, yeah. And then pretty quickly it just goes downhill, and then it becomes so ridiculous and cheesy. I mean, they have this ridiculous escape that Sylvester Stallone is planning, and they decide that they want to get all of the soccer players. They have to have this big tournament that the Nazis have organized at Max von Sydow. He's the Nazi guy who just really respects the game, and he wants to have this friendly competition that quickly soon balloons into this propaganda thing. And so he agrees to Michael Caine's request to get like other prisoners from other camps that are also good soccer players to get to the camp so that they have a chance against the German nationals.
This is it's almost offensive.
No. This is the best. This is why I couldn't stop watching it, right? And it's directed in a really sort of stodgy way from John Huston, who clearly, like, the ship had sailed, but nobody told him. So he still made movies, except that he came back with that Pritzi's Honor. But before that, he had Victory. And so
he had another good movie in that period, Fat City.
Yeah, but that was no. This is 1981. Fat City was like 72 or 73.
Oh, you're right. Okay,
that's when he was there, and then you know, then he made Annie, and then he made Victory, and then Annie. So anyway, Sylvester Stallone, he's the the cocky American, and he is just when he tries not to do the he just is not a good actor.
No, he can't do it.
So he's the rebellious guy. He wants to escape the prison, and the escape team approves his plan, but they said, listen, what we want you to do is we want you not to go the way you're going to go. We want you to escape to Paris. And magically, he's going to get there with like no problems. And we want you to make contact here with the resistance and see if they can figure out a way to get the team out because they're going to play in Paris.
This is the most, it sounds like a joke.
Wait, so here's the escape, right? They have this interesting, like, I love those, like, little escape plot movies where they come out with these details. So he escapes, and there's this great thing where it hinges on him, like, sneaking over to this German car where somebody's coming out, and it's at night, and they're out with a date. I don't understand even what the thing's going on, but he somehow jumps on the side of the car. And they don't know or hear him jump on the side of the car. And he's able to get through the gate. And then he, like, rolls off. And then he gets to the train station. And they've also, this is kind of cool, is in order to make sure that the head count is right, they are standing out in the day, and they've got a dummy of Sylvester Stallone attached. And from a distance, it looked like it's just their counting heads. So they think that Sylvester Stallone's still in the camp. And he makes his way to Paris, and magically, you know, he gets to the resistance, and they start figuring out that there's a whole underground sewer system under the stadium that they're going to be playing in, and that they might be able to, like, break into their locker room and get them away at halftime. Right? So this is the plan. And then they said, well, but we got to be able to tell your team. So you're going to have to go get recaptured.
Oh,
and
wow.
And so Sylvester Stallone's like, no, I ain't going to get there. I'm not going to get recaptured. I'm going to escape it. But no, he agrees.
Feel like I have to watch this now.
So he gets recaptured, and then he gets put into the cooler. And so they can't make any contact with him, right? And they don't know whether or not he made, you know, what arrangements he made. So they don't know what the plan is. So they say to Max von Sydow, we need Sylvester Stallone. He is our backup goalkeeper, and our goalkeeper broke his arm. And they're like, okay, we understand, but we're going to need proof. So they end up having to take the goalkeeper and break his arm so that Sylvester Stallone can come out of the cooler just to tell them that the plan is on and what the plan is. So now they have the big game.
Wait. How do just cut ahead to the ending? I just want.
Well, I am. So they're playing the game and they're getting beat. And of course, the German high command has said that that the guys have to, the officials have to cheat because they don't want the Allies to win. So it's now like, it's like 4-1 at halftime, and the guys break through underneath the locker room, and they're like all escaping. But then one of the guys, one of the soccer team guys, goes, "Come on, man, we can beat them. We aren't going to, like, you're not going to escape. You're going to go out there and try to beat them." So then they all decide that they're going to, instead of escaping, they're going to go back
and play the game.
And they're going to play the game. And essentially, they would have won, except that the officials cheated, but they still were able to tie. And of course, there's a penalty kick that Stallone is able to stop miraculously.
Right.
And all of the French people are so excited that they storm the stadium out of the stands. And in the confusion, they were able to somehow overpower all the Nazi guards and throw coats over all the soccer players, including Pelé, and get them to escape. And then it, you know, does one of those freeze frames 80s endings. And it was the most ridiculous. I mean, this movie should have had the Mystery Science guy.
And you stuck with it. You stuck with it.
Oh, I had to. Well, it's a good movie to, like, I'll watch these films while I'm, like, folding clothes or
something. Right, right. Oh, that's hilarious.
That will not be on Criterion.
No. Well, you never know. You got Pearl Harbor on there. That pretty much, that lowers the bar pretty far.
I don't know. Well, anyways, gang, look, hope you've enjoyed, and maybe we've convinced you to give the Criterion Channel a shot when they come on in a few days.
There will be a lot of great films, as we've seen.
And we'll be talking about them.
Yep.
Goodbye, people.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, bellboy. Hey, bellboy. Hey, bellboy. Hey, bellboy. Hey, bellboy.